Chapter 20. Monty Bernstein wasn't looking his bright, chipper self as he walked into the dining room of the Bed and Breakfast. The lawyer had been chauffeured back to his Boston townhouse after the meeting with the chief of police, and had driven himself back in time to meet Harlan Salter IV for breakfast. He hadn't had more than 2 hours of sleep. Instead, Monty had been a busy boy, spending most of his time on the phone. But there was some business to be done that people felt uncomfortable doing over the phone. The kind of business that required words spoken in dimly lit rooms between men of less than honorable intention. Words spoken so that there could be no misunderstandings and from which there could be no safe retreats. Words sealed with cold stares and rough handshakes held a beat too long. Words sealed with cash and dark promises. Monty wasn't so tired or distracted that he didn't take in his surroundings. Quaint seaside inns weren't his thing. Monty was all about elliptical machines, a golf course, spas with mud facials and four kinds of massages, and Tai Chi classes. His taste ran to boutique hotels with Michelin-rated restaurants and rooftop bars that had lists of fine ports and sherries as long as the Old Testament. Places like the Osprey Inn Bed and Breakfast, with its heavy burgundy velvet drapes, oak paneling, pendulous hanging fixtures, and cranky staircases, reminded him of his Grandma Hannah's apartment. The air in the Osprey was a clash of unpleasant and opposing scents. There was the predominance of lavender and orange-rind potpourri, pounds of which seemed to fill bowls on every flat surface in the lobby. But just beneath the floral and citric assault came the even less appealing grace notes of camphor and mildew. For Christ's sakes, Monty thought, if the cook had been stewing some stuffed cabbage, the place would have smelled like Grandma Hannah's apartment. Salter was sitting alone at a small round table for two, his unlit pipe resting on the fussy laced tablecloth. Dressed in a suit and a tie, he was reading the Wall Street Journal, which was folded up and over into a neat rectangle. Monty checked his watch and couldn't believe that Salter was dressed in a suit and tie. Paradise wasn't a suit and tie kind of town, and no one else in the Osprey was dressed in anything more formal than a sweater and khakis. Then again, Monty couldn't recall ever seeing Harlan when he wasn't dressed in a suit and a tie. He probably slept that way. Also had an iron rod permanently stuck up his ass. "Good morning, Harlan," Monty said, pulling out a chair and sitting down opposite his client. Salter didn't acknowledge Monty's arrival. He kept on reading. Monty flagged down the waitress and made the universal sign for coffee. "Is it done?" Salter said, finally conceding he was no longer alone, but without moving the paper away from his face. "The meeting went well." "It could scarcely have gone worse than your meeting with the chief last evening." "I told you in the car on the way up here, that Stone was no fool," Monty said in his own defense. "I wish you wouldn't have let him bait you like that." The coffee arrived. The waitress asked Monty if he would like something to eat. Before the lawyer could answer, Harlan Salter made a choked kind of bark that passed for a laugh. "Mr. Bernstein will have fresh berries and yogurt," Salter said to the waitress, and then turned to his lawyer. "They don't serve the usual compost you put in your body here. No golden beet, alfalfa, and carrot concoctions today, I'm afraid." "That's fine," Monty said to the waitress, and she left. From where I stood, it was you who looked like a fool. Stone was goading you. He was goading me, but it was to get to you. Please, Harlan, from now on, let me be the one to handle the chief. Besides, I don't think the chief will be an issue much longer. That got Salter to finally put the paper down.
"Meaning?"
Monty said, "I got a call last night. Blocked number. A voice I didn't recognize. Sounded Southie with a vague hint of Dublin."
"And?"
"And the voice said that the next time you're made a generous offer and you refuse it, it won't be a poor girl who loses her life. That Ben would be returned to you after you'd had some time to reflect upon how you," he emphasized "you," "were responsible for an innocent girl's murder."
"What else?"
"He said that we'd be contacted in very short order by a party familiar to you, and that you'd be wise to quickly agree to the now somewhat less generous terms." Salter's jaw clenched again. A vein pulsed in his neck. His pale face turning an angry shade of red.
Did he say how we'd be contacted? Did you inquire?
It wasn't a conversation, Harlan. He spoke and I listened. But at least we know who has been and that he's safe. It's just as we suspected.
Why do I find no comfort in that?
Because he's your son, and you love him, and you won't feel better about any of it until you have him back.
Stick to what you know best, Monty. Don't discuss my feelings as if you had any notion or concept of what they might be, Salter said, a sneer on his face.
Are the arrangements in place?
Things have been set in motion.
Salter picked up his pipe, leaned across the table, and poked the tip of the stem into the lawyer's chest.
Not until I have Ben back. Is that understood?
I made that clear to them, Harlan. Nothing is going to happen until I give the green light. Salter sat back, pulled the paper in front of his face, and didn't say another word.